Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we're going to kick off a three-part conversation around the importance and power of team. Andy, obviously for most of our listeners, team isn't a new concept. Why is it still important enough to talk about?
Well, I think, Lane, that most employees don't feel like they're part of a team, and yet most leaders feel like they are team leaders. And there's often this disconnect. You know, I mean, leaders all the time talk about my team, my team, my team.
Right.
Then you go and talk to the people on the team and say, hey, do you feel like you're part of a team? They're like, no, I think I'm an employee. So there's a bit of a disconnect. And so I'm really, really excited about these next 3 months, because we're going to talk about some of the things that really that create an actual team. And we're going to try to bridge the gap between, you know, the leaders who feel like they're team leaders and people who feel like, hey, I'm just an employee. I work here. You know, at times I feel like I'm part of a team, but most of the time I just go do my job.
So is that important? I mean, that they feel like they're part of a team?
Well, in some context, it's probably not that important. You know, the leader thinks he's or she's leading a team. Individuals feel like employees, so what? But if anyone has ever worked in an environment where they have actually felt like a part of a team, there are so many advantages, and that's one of the reasons we're going to talk about this. But primarily, there's synergy. You just get more done. And we've all heard the illustration of geese flying in formation. And there have been many, many studies that show when there's an actual sense of synergy in any environment, more things happen. So a leader who is committed to progress, a leader who's committed to getting something done, they need to figure out how to create synergy in their organization. We certainly are committed to that. And part of creating synergy is creating an actual, not a perceived, but an actual sense of team among a group of people who might otherwise simply see themselves as employees.
And so the opposite of synergy would be?
Well, I think the opposite of synergy is what we would is misaligned energy, or what we call sideways energy, where there's lots of activity. Everybody's busy. You know, we're assuming that everyone's working hard. But if people are simply working hard but not simply working as a team, again, there's misaligned energy. It's like having the front end of your car out of alignment. You can still go forward. It just takes a lot more energy, and you just aren't going to enjoy the ride as much. So the sense of synergy is important. If you've ever worked in an environment where you have it, there's just something awesome about that. So what we want to talk about in these next three podcasts is how to create that and how to determine whether or not you have it. So this is a very, very important topic.
Andy, I like the story of, I guess, sort of the aha moment that you had, I guess it was about a year ago that led to this content. Tell us that story.
Yeah. Last summer, I took several Sundays off and I just visited our Atlanta area churches. I just parked like everybody, walked into the buildings like everybody else, sat with my family like everybody else, and just was overwhelmed with the sense of really synergy that I experienced with our volunteers and our staff on a weekend service. For those of you who have ever visited one of our churches, you know, we have thousands and thousands of people, thousands of children, hundreds and hundreds of volunteers. And, you know, you pull up on any large church campus and it's just amazing to watch. So I'm going church to church to church, watching all of this happen. And I was proud on one hand. And on the other hand, I thought, why does this work so well? I mean, I was here from the beginning. I helped create all of this. But it dawned on me, I'm not sure I could explain this. And more to the point, I'm not sure I could fix it if it suddenly broke. And so there's a part of me that wants to understand why things that work, because there's a part of me that's afraid I wouldn't be able to fix it if it broke. In fact, I would just say to leaders, if you don't get anything else out of today's podcast, it's simply this. If you don't know why something's working when it's working, you probably won't know how to fix it when it breaks. And as we've said before on our podcast, we don't generally study success, our own success. We study other people's success. We don't study our own. We focus on failure. We focus on fixing things. And obviously, that's a part of leadership. So as I watched our campus just work so well, I thought, I want to understand why, and I want to condense it down to something I can teach to our current staff and to our future staff, and to again surface kind of the secret sauce of what creates this actual sense of energy and synergy and teamwork, not simply among employees, but among these hundreds of volunteers that again come together every weekend to do amazing things along with our staff. On one particular Sunday that I visited, we had a combination of over 3,000 middle schoolers at our five Atlanta area campuses, 3,000 middle schoolers. And all of these middle schoolers showed up at our five campuses. They ended up in small groups. They ended up with leaders. I mean, again, you know, the efficiency, the organization, it's just wonderful. But again, How did we get here? How do we maintain it? And again, how do we hand it off to that next generation of both employees and volunteers that are going to be a part of our organization? So I spent several weeks basically asking a lot of questions and essentially trying to boil this down to something that we could communicate to our core team. And as always, you discover transferable principles. And so that's what I want to talk about. And obviously, our context is a nonprofit, but these are some things that I think apply to every organization. So I'm pretty excited to talk about it.
Andy, I think one of the things our listeners may find interesting is that as the leader of this organization, you could take several weeks off and walk around and still observe a lot going on. I mean, that you didn't have to be involved in.
Well, honestly, Lane, for me, success is watching it work without me. I think that's success for any leader, but that's pretty easy for me, and I'm not sure why. But really, the weekends where I have no specific responsibility and I simply show up on one of our environments or campuses and watch it work well without me being actively involved on that weekend, I mean, those are honestly the Sundays that I go home and just want to high-five everybody I see and say, look at it go. Because ultimately, you know, that's success. So to have the flexibility to work on it and not simply in it, that's something we've talked about in the past, to be able to work on it, not simply in it, that's important. And you have to have some distance or some space to be able to do that. So again, it was actually a year ago, I was able to walk around and watch it work without me and then ask the question, why does this work so well at all? To which you might say, because you let it work without you, because you didn't have hands-on those weekends. So, you know, that's the only way to learn. So essentially, I wanted to discover what we were doing well, how we do it well, and then be able to turn around and make sure, again, our current leadership and the next generation of leaders understand this.
All right, Andy, you've kind of summarized what you observed in one statement that you gave our staff. Give us that statement.
Yeah, my overall observation is that high-performance teams are comprised of people with extraordinary clarity around three things: what, why, and how, along with a strong predisposition toward execution. High-performance teams are comprised of people with extraordinary clarity, and we're going to talk about each of these, extraordinary clarity around what are we doing, why are we doing it, how do we do it here, along with a strong predisposition toward execution, toward getting things done. So that's sort of the big picture. And then for these next three podcasts, we're going to tear that apart and look at each one of those components separately.
Andy, when you taught our staff this observation, you gave us three action steps that we're going to look at these 3 months. Let's start with the first one.
Well, the first one is to select performance-oriented people and position them for maximum impact. If you're going to create a high-performance team or a team that engages, or if you're going to try to create synergy among a group of people that might normally simply feel like employees, you have to select upfront performance-oriented people. And remember, the context of this conversation is teams, people who are going to get things done. Mm-hmm. So you upfront, you have to select performance-oriented people, people who are inclined to get things done, and then position them for maximum impact. Make sure they're in the right place. Now, none of this is new. I mean, I'm certainly not the first person to make these observations, but it's interesting, especially in nonprofit world, sometimes as we think about, on one hand, we want to get things done, but if you don't hire doers and if you don't select people who are inclined to get things done, you just don't get as much done. So if you want a high-performance team, then upfront you have to select performance-oriented people.
So, Andy, you talk about hiring doers, well, right, as opposed to what?
Well, this is where I get into trouble. And within the context of our organization, I think our staff understands this, but on two or three occasions when I've talked about this outside of our organization, I get some pushback. So I'll just say this, and we'll see what happens. Essentially, when I'm talking about, when I say hire doers, I'm saying hire doers, not thinkers. And that doesn't mean hire, you know, doers, not smart people. It has nothing to do with IQ. It has nothing to do with intelligence. But as we know, and as our leaders who are listening know, there are people who are predisposed toward action, and there are people who are predisposed toward thinking about things and talking about things and philosophizing, you know, philosophical about things and writing about things. And that's okay. We need everybody. But if you're going to create a high performance team, you need to hire or select people who are action oriented because you're trying to get things done. So we say recruit doers, not thinkers. Again, it has nothing to do with intelligence. I mean, our wives are a great example of this. Tracy and Sandra are both extremely intelligent, and they're both doers. I mean, Sandra doesn't procrastinate about anything. In our family, she is far more a doer than I am. but she's far smarter than I am. So again, it really is a predisposition. So again, in the hiring process and the selection process, you need to hire and select people who have and, you know, who have the promise of doing things.
So then what's the best way in that process to identify a doer?
Well, there are probably some very sophisticated ways, but here's our way. And I actually learned this from my assistant, Diane Grant. In job interviews, she would always ask, "What have you done?" I mean, we want to know where
well,
you went
easy,
to school.
Yeah.
We want to know where you went to school. We want to know what your degree was. We want to know what your previous employer, you know, where you worked before you came to work for us. But, okay, having, you know, gotten all that out of you, what have you done? And when people pause and again, they go back to their previous job, or no, we know where you worked. What have you done? Because there are people, when you say, what have you done, they immediately begin talking about unusual things they've done or accomplished or things they initiated or projects that they led or suggestions that they made that turned into great ideas. If somebody hasn't done anything yet, you know, you're taking a bit of a risk, you know, assuming they're going to do something once they come to work for you. So that's a good question. What have you actually done? Not where have you worked, what have you done? Again, there are probably way more sophisticated ways of determining whether a person's a doer. And again, we do all the testing. We use Right Path. We you know, we use all the tools. But I think that's a great question. Hey, you know, what have you done? Pause. Awkward pause.
Andy, you just mentioned educational background in that response. And surely you're not saying education isn't important.
Absolutely not. All I'm saying is that education isn't an indicator of whether or not a person can get things done. In fact, more and more studies, we've talked about this in our leadership team, are showing that some of the men and women who come out of the best schools, mm-hmm. once they go to work for large companies, they can't get things done. They're super smart. But in terms of actually getting things done, you know, they're not coming out on the high end of that scale. So here's what we say, that it's much easier to educate a doer than to activate a thinker. It's much easier to educate a doer than to activate a thinker. So in our situation or in our context, we hire lots of people out of the marketplace who do not have a theological education, and then we get them theologically educated, because we would rather hire people who've done things either in the for-profit or nonprofit world, bring them into our system, and then we can figure out a way to get them educated to the point of, you know, having the expertise they need to do the specific right. things we've asked them to do. But what we've learned is, hiring people right out of school or hiring people with a theological education doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be able to do what we want them to do. So again, it's much easier to educate a doer than to activate a thinker. And again, when I say that in, you know, in a public arena or in a conference, you know, I can almost look at faces and see who the doers are and the people who are kind of, I need to think about that. Like, and that's my point.
Andy, there seems to be a Jim Collins quote for just about every situation. Yeah. I know you have one that applies here.
Yeah, I love this statement he makes in Good to Great. He says, if you have the right people on the bus, and again, we've all incorporated the bus analogy, which is so powerful. If you have the right people on the bus, the problem of how to motivate and manage people largely goes away. That's an extraordinarily insightful statement. If you have the right people on the bus, that is, if you have selected or hired the right people, the problem of how to motivate and manage people largely goes away. You just don't have to motivate a doer. You have to rein them in. You have to tell them that not all new ideas are good ideas. You have to tell them to go home and spend time with their family. But the problem of managing people largely goes away. Then he says this, the right people don't need to be tightly managed or fired up. Great vision without great people is irrelevant. So again, you can have the greatest idea in the world, the greatest vision or mission in the world, but if you don't have executors, people who can execute on a plan, they may be the smartest people in the room, but you just aren't going to get things done. So when it comes to creating a high-performance team, you begin by selecting people who are execution-oriented.
And that leads us really to the second part of this action step, that it's not enough to select action-oriented people. You have to position them for maximum impact.
Absolutely. And again, this is something that every leader listening to this podcast understands, that you have to position people in the organization in a place where they can win. I love this quote from Albert Einstein. He says, everybody is a genius, But if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing it's stupid. So again, if you take talented people but put them in the wrong place, they're not going to feel talented. They're not going to succeed. And I think, you know, everybody at our stage of life has had a job where you felt like a failure. Mm. And it wasn't because you were a failure. I was a failure. We were just in an environment where, you know, our skill set wasn't leveraged properly. And we just couldn't do what we were asked to do. So getting action-oriented people, execution-oriented people, and then positioning them properly within the organization is huge. Now, in this respect, speaking directly to our podcast listeners, your organizational chart is not your friend. Your org chart is not your friend in this respect. The problem with an org chart is oftentimes it's a performance-limiting template. And in some cases, you just have to ignore it because the temptation, obviously, is to move people up the org chart and to give people responsibility as other people move out. But when you step back and ask the question, who are the right people for these specific tasks? You know, who are the people who can really get the job done? Sometimes the org chart gets in the way. And so in our organization, we have two or three people who are just extraordinarily intuitive when it comes to positioning people correctly, and I'm not one of them. And so we have learned to lean into their ability to recognize talent and position talent, which means sometimes you set the org chart aside. Sometimes you have some very awkward conversations. You take people that feel like they were in line for a position and say, you know what? It's best for our organization and it's really best for you to leave you where you are, and we're going to do a bit of an end run and promote someone past you because you want people who are properly positioned in the organization. And that is awkward. And in the past, when I've ignored that principle, we have promoted people past their competency. We've promoted people into positions where their skill set wasn't used and they felt like failures. So to be committed to positioning people properly, the org chart is not necessarily your friend.
All right. So assuming you found performance-oriented people and you've gotten them in the right position, what then?
Well, then you have to create a culture where you are constantly connecting the dots. And again, this is terminology we've talked about before on our podcast, where people understand and actually feel the actual interdependency. And this is a key to people really feeling like they're on a team. In the world of sports, this is easy. Everybody feels their interdependency. Pitchers, you know, do not need center fielders to pitch well, but pitchers need center fielders to win games. So in an actual team, people don't feel like they necessarily need everybody on the team to help them do their job, but they understand they need everybody on that team to help the organization win or the division or the department or, you know, whatever it might be. So part of our responsibility as leaders is to help these individual players understand their actual interdependency and to create a sense in which they actually feel that interdependency. And how you do that is going to be very, industry specific, company specific, almost in some cases personality specific. But there's got to be an environment in which leaders help individual team players feel their actual interdependency. Because if there's no sense of interdependency, there's not going to be a sense of team. Even if the leader, from the position of authority can look at the organization and know, hey, every single player on this team is actually interdependent. If the players don't feel it, you're never going to have the synergy that you want. And again, people won't feel like they're actually part of a team. So you select action-oriented people, position them correctly, and then do something within the organization to help them understand and feel their interdependency, or the way we say it is, you know, connect the dots.
Andy, I think one of the ways that you have done this and our lead pastors do this in our staff meetings is they're constantly thanking people, giving people the opportunity to recognize that interdependency.
Yeah, we begin most of our staff meetings by saying, hey, what happened this past weekend that made you feel like you were successful and what you came here to do and who helped you do it? And so oftentimes, you know, we'll spend 10 or 15 minutes of people standing up and thanking other team members, other divisions, other departments, in some cases, other sites or other campuses and saying, hey, we couldn't have done what we set out to do if you hadn't helped. And it's just a simple way to remind everybody that there's not just perceived interdependence, that there's actual interdependence. And by, you know, a thank you note, recognition is just a way of saying, I couldn't do what I came here to do without you helping me. And again, in a two-hour context, you know, in professional sports or college sports, it's so obvious. In organizational life, it is not as obvious. And so you've got to create, in some ways, artificial ways to help connect those dots and, again, help people feel their sense of interdependence. And that interdependence creates so much energy for a person. When they understand, hey, even though I sit in a cube, you know, pretty much all day long and look at a computer screen, if I didn't do what I am doing, he or she or this other department or this other division would not be successful in what they're doing. It's so easy to lose sight of that because in organizational life, we all get isolated. We all get focused. I just want to make sure it's a curveball that touches the corner of the plate. You know, I just want to make sure it's a fastball that's right down the middle. And we're all, in some ways, technicians. We're all focused on what we have come to do.
All right, we've said we're going to get high-performance people yep. in the right spots,
right.
and then we're going to connect the dots for
yep.
them. What's next?
What's next is next month's podcast, where we come back and talk about the idea of extraordinary clarity around what, why, and how. It's the second action item on creating high-performance teams. How about that?
That's great. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what we call a teaser. But before we sign off for this month,
yeah.
do you have any final thoughts?
Absolutely. I would say to our podcast listeners, if you are currently in a division, a department, an organization, a franchise, a branch where you feel like you're doing this right, that you feel like, hey, I really do feel like I'm part of a team, or I feel like I'm leading a team of people who feel like they're part of a team, then what I would recommend you do is to do what I did last year. To figure out why it's working. Again, if you don't know why it's working when it's working, you won't know how to fix it when it breaks. So I think the exercise I went through is probably even more valuable than the conclusions I came to. Mm. So I would say to all of our leaders out there, if you see a part of your organization or maybe your organization in whole, in total, that's working well, you need to figure out why it's working well, document it, and then teach it. And you don't teach it in a way to say, hey, let's all get together so I can solve a problem. You do what I did a year ago, or actually a few months ago. You sit down with the staff and say, hey, I want to tell you why what you're doing works so well. Let's make sure we don't drift from these core practices or core values or whatever it is that you discover in your own organization. Because if it's successful, the tendency is not to do much of an autopsy, because we don't generally do an autopsy on success. So bottom line is, walk around, figure out what you're doing well, document it, teach it, and in that way you'll ensure that you don't drift from it.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for taking this time with us today, and thank you to our audience for listening. To hear more from Andy on leadership, visit andystanley.com.